Welcome to the Hairdryer Treatment Podcast, powered by Kevin Grogan Soccer, Soccer Coffee, and much more. Welcome to the show this week. Later on, we have a very interesting interview with Steve Acosta, who was the translator for some of the best players in the world and some of the biggest clubs in the world. He also has some kids playing travel soccer over here and gives a great insight into his expectations with them. It was a really, really interesting interview. But for now, it's sad to say that Eric Harrison passed away earlier today. Very sad. For those who don't know, Eric was one of the greatest youth coaches in the world. He was massively behind the class of 92 and their development and production. That's Ryan Giggs, David Beckham, Phil Neville, Gary Neville, Paul Scholes, Nicky Butt. I had the pleasure of working with him when I was at Manchester United for the first year I was there. And he truly was a great coach and a mentor, and kind of taught people not only how to play on the field, but how to conduct himself off the field. And it was sad to see him pass away. But I mean, his legacy probably, you know, will be best remembered for the class of 92. Those players went on to be icons of the game at a world stage, winning Premier Leagues, winning Champions Leagues, playing for their country, England, in the World Cup and different things like that. So he was a really, really great coach. Sad to see him pass away, but I was just privileged that I got to work with him for that brief period, and it kind of helped me be sculpted as a coach and a developer myself. So I just wanted to mention that today. But we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be straight into our interview with Steve Acosta.
We might be the chihuahua.
You are an ostrich.
Eggs.
Dilly din, dilly dong, come on.
I want to be clear that I don't want to play mind games.
But I think it was an angry man. I think he's disturbed for some reason or other.
Honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Steve, thanks for joining us today. So just for our listeners, talk about where you grew up and your kind of first memories of soccer.
Absolutely. Yeah, I grew up in Queens, New York, and then moved to Long Island. And honestly, I've been playing soccer my whole life since I was born, as far as I can remember. My dad never played it, but my uncle played it, and then my brothers played it, so always been involved in my life.
And your family originally from Colombia?
That's correct. Yeah, my family's from Colombia, and yeah, I try to get out there as often as possible. I have all my aunts, uncles all out there as well.
Yeah, brilliant. So one thing that intrigues me about you, Steve, is you have worked with a lot of top professional teams that have come over here, and you've translated for them. So just talk a bit about when you did that and what that experience was like.
Absolutely. So I work actually in the financial district, and I actually lived in Fort Lee, New Jersey, and my neighbors was actually a player for the New York MetroStars, which ended up being the New York Red Bulls. So he got me involved in translating for a company called Champions World that was owned and started by Charlie Stilettano.
Yeah, he's Relevant Sports now.
Absolutely, yeah. So I did actually a lot of the translations for all the teams, professional teams that came here over the summer, so like Manchester United, Liverpool, Real Madrid. I actually translated at a lot of the media events for them.
And what was it like to kind of be in the company of some of them top players? And obviously soccer's been growing here in America over the years. And, you know, at the time you were doing that, it was probably, what, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
So it was still growing and starting to kind of come to fruition.
Absolutely, yeah. So they used to come, you know, they'd spend a whole week here training in Princeton University for the most part. But they do a lot of city things. They took a jog in Central Park. I was always with these guys and translated in different media events. But it was just interesting to see. I mean, that was when the Galacticos had David Beckham, Roberto Carlos, Zidane. And I can tell you some fun stories about those days. I got fortunate enough to go out with them one night. And it was just interesting to see the whole dynamic, specifically with Zidane, because he was the captain at that time.
A big figure in the dressing room, I've heard.
Big figure in the dressing room. You know, then you have fun guys like Roberto Carlos. He's always drinking wine.
Yeah.
Then you had Steve McManaman, and they were like best friends. So it was just interesting to see, again, a microcosm of soccer. It's just the different, you know, cultures, different ethnicities, and just getting along over a soccer ball, really.
Yeah, and probably for those superstars coming to New York was a chance to maybe unwind as such, because they wouldn't be as well known here.
Absolutely, that's correct. Yeah, so they I mean, granted, you had the stadiums filled with I remember a Giant Stadium. At that time, it was Giant Stadium. It was about 80, 90,000 that were going to watch these guys on a Thursday night. So you definitely had some good viewing. But at their practices, which were open, it was a couple hundred, but it wasn't anything like now. If they come there, it was pretty major. So.
Absolutely. And you talk about the different cultures and the mixing with each other as players. I know you've talked about this before in terms of your kids playing. And they both play in Clarkstown Soccer Club, but what you want out of it for them, and part of it is for them to make new friends and learn how to interact with people.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, soccer has given me so much and my family so much in terms of just learning. I've seen it in the professional field, and I work in the financial industry, and I've seen it, you know, be relevant over there when I've had companies that I deal with from France, you know, don't know the language, but, you know, mention Zidane and all of a sudden we're having a beer and getting along, right? From a professional side, then obviously a personal side, I just think soccer is really a microcosm of life, right? I mean, you go into the business world and you're not always going to like the person sitting next to you or the person you have to work with. But, you know, similar to soccer, you're not going to like every single one of your players, but you have to figure out how to get it along. You all have a common goal. So I think that's the most interesting thing. For me personally, I mean, for my kids, it's, you know, I've always said for my daughter and my son to be able to take them anywhere in the world, drop them off somewhere, and just be able to make friends. And usually that's, to be honest, over a soccer ball, right? I mean, because that's where the skill set is.
It's actually great to hear that, because I think one of the issues here in America is that parents don't always look at it like that. It's all about win at all cost. Maybe some people have unrealistic expectations of their kids becoming world-class, you know, superstars. But the fundamentals of it are is to be healthy through sport and make friends and learn life lessons. And so it's a breath of fresh air to hear that.
And it's no matter what ethnicity you are, where you come from, you find a common goal, right? And in the sport, it's a soccer ball, right? But it's seeing the boys play together or the girls play together, different backgrounds, and just finding a way to get along. It's pretty amazing. If
you ask you obviously have a son, Jake, and you have a daughter, Ali. Has it been different for you dealing with them as young soccer players, with one being male and female, or is it the same?
It's actually really interesting. It's very different, I think. You have to kind of find how they're going to receive feedback, right? And I think boys sometimes are a little bit different than girls, right?
I think the girls pick it up quicker. I've always found that. They want to listen a bit more.
They're more mature, more detail-oriented, can be more technical, right? Where my son is just, all right, let's play, you know? My daughter is very nervous about, you know, who are we playing with? Are my friends there? Are my friends on that team? Are they not? Where my son, you can put him in the middle of anywhere. If there's a ball there, he'll go play. He doesn't care. I mean, just now I left him in Colombia for 3 weeks on his own, stayed with my cousins, and he was literally playing soccer every day with people he met on the streets, barely knowing the language.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think that's a great story. You know, I've always said that in relation to where people are from, your nationality, there's kind of like a brand and a style attached to that. Yeah, would you agree with that? Like, there's a Colombian style, there's maybe an Irish style of playing, there's a Spanish style.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do believe that. I think
the personality comes out.
Personality, some more technical than others, some are more aggressive than others. But yeah, I think, again, but you put these kids on a team that where you have someone who's very technical, maybe from a Latin culture, and you have someone maybe a little more physical. They learn off each other, which is kind of interesting, right?
Yeah, it's really cool. Now, obviously, this weekend we're heading down to the Disney Cup and your son is playing. What were the kind of expectations for that?
For me, I mean, it's really obviously it's a competitive environment. So we're very excited about that. And I think he's at a point now where he's really maturing and really understanding the game and loves the game, right? So for us, it's really just having a good time, enjoying it, but also keeping in mind, take it serious. It's competitive. Now there are more eyes on you now, right? So it's not like when I went 3 years ago with him and my family, you know, Disney was part of it and all that good stuff. Now it's a little bit more serious.
And he's a 2005, so he's starting to get to the age now where college scouts are looking. Is that something you would want for him to get recruited for college, or is it kind of see what happens?
Yeah, I leave it up to him. Obviously, personally, I do want to see him enjoy the game, learn from the game, take as much as he can from the game. Sure, I'd love to see him playing in college, but if that's what, you know, if he chooses not to, that's okay as well. I mean, I think he does want to at this point. But, you know, it's tough. Again, in this country, it's tough because what are you making as a MLS player nowadays, right? I mean, and then I can, you know, what can you make in the financial district or one of these others? So that, you know, long-term wise,
it's a big argument because you can go kind of straight into the MLS earning $25,000 a year,
which, you know, isn't a lot in New York, or you can go and get your degree and go in and start climbing that ladder. So it is a double-edged sword there, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I played in college, but decided obviously to continue moving on from a corporate environment and just playing there. So, and then played for Fidelity Investments and some of these other companies. So I kind of attached it, always been playing and attached it to my career in a way. But really it's up to him how far he wants to take it.
Yeah. And just talking about your own career as such, playing, if you want to call it a career, but you've always played. I've seen you play, and you're obviously gifted yourself, but you've played CSL and you've played at the different levels. And I always, you know, talk a lot about the kind of level of amateur soccer in New York. It's a very high level.
It is. It gets competitive. For me, again, soccer has been very personal for me. It's given me a lot in terms of, so I have my brother who also plays. I have two older brothers, my oldest being disabled, mentally disabled. He enjoys, the only reason me and my other brother still play is because he's quote unquote the assistant coach, and he comes every Sunday to watch, right? So it's really the three of us getting together, driving to the games, driving an hour to the game, and it's our family time in a way, right? So which keeps me very close to my brothers, and obviously keeps my oldest brother a little kind of golden life in a way.
An amazing story, really, because you know, you're looking at the bigger picture.
100%.
You know, and I sometimes wish more parents kind of had that mentality. Now, just backtracking again to the bits and pieces you did as a interpreter, like, was it something you were nervous about when you first got into it because they were so big in terms of celebrity?
Absolutely, yeah, because I've always appreciated that world, right? I knew the names and always been watching EPL games and obviously La Liga and all that stuff. So certainly it was intimidating to me. Also from a Spanish perspective, I'm fluent, but you know, you can still break it up a little bit, right? So I was a little nervous about that and not satisfying the folks that had me there, right? But I enjoyed every minute of it. I got to tell you, watching these guys, just the way they practice, how serious they are in their practices. I think that's one thing you do very well here is you bring a seriousness to the practice, and it's always competitive and trying to be your best at every practice. And it's tough for kids to get that sometimes, right? Sometimes they're very relaxed and you need somebody kind of pushing them a little bit more. And that's the difference in my eyes between a good player and a great player, right?
It's that Sir Alex Ferguson always said, it's that level of intensity in training. Often it's not what you're doing, but it's how you're doing it. Now, Charlie Stilettano, we mentioned earlier, he's kind of owns that company, Relevant Sports. He's a good friend with Sir Alex Ferguson. But what was he like to work with? He's a bit of a character around kind of the scene in soccer here, being very successful. And really any big game with big teams coming over is usually going through his company.
He's involved, yeah, and that's been for a while. So he started, initially when I started, I believe it was Champions World, then it became Soccer United Marketing. And I think it's part of the Internationals Cup now. So I've lost a little touch, obviously, through LinkedIn. I'm still in touch with him. Very serious, very aggressive guy. Nice guy, though. Very aggressive from a business
wants
perspective.
Wants things done.
Wants
things done.
Wants them done the right way. Always very detail-oriented, which I always appreciated, right? So making sure, you know, if Roberto Carlos had wine, that he had it, right?
Yeah.
I remember I even had to take some of the guys from Liverpool to Short Hills Mall to the Apple store, and they literally bought out every like iPod at that time, anything you can imagine that I related to it, right?
Yeah.
So anything in the Apple store, they bought out. So these guys would come here, and they're really kids. They're 20 plus years old, right?
But they're earning big money.
Yeah,
they want to spend
big
it.
Money. They want to spend it for their families, bringing stuff back, and it was really neat. It was a cool experience.
Did you find them nice people and easy to get on with? Because I do always say the ones that make it at the top, whether it's soccer, whether it's actors or musicians, usually the ones at the very top, they're actually usually very down to earth because they've had to put in that work to get there.
Yeah, they're
not in all cases, but
not in all cases, but you can certainly relate to a lot of the guys. They're like just very kind of everyday guys, and they'll joke around with you. And I think when as long as you're not the guy coming over with a phone taking a picture in their face and you know, in the elevator at a hotel, which I spent a lot of time with these guys at, you know, in Central Park, running up to them taking pictures or trying to record them or anything like that. So you're down to earth. They know you're helping. You're there to help them. So they're usually very, very nice.
Yeah. And then again, flipping again onto the kind of player development and the parent aspect of soccer here. What advice would you give? You talk a lot of sense in terms of where you want your kids to be at and what you want them to get out of soccer. What's your advice to parents? Because they do get caught up in the win at all cost mentality, or we have to be in this league or have that status or got soccer points or this scholarship. Or, sure. You know, what would your advice be to a new parent coming in, say, are you eight?
Yeah, it's funny to say that because, you know, you see the evolution, and I was involved in the evolution of it, being a parent and seeing these kids, and your son's a star from 8 to 10. He's the best one, and he's going to be the next profession, next David Beckham, right? So you get caught up in that, and it's easy to get caught up on that. So, I mean, I always say just, you know, look at the big picture. I think, you know, as they get older, the kid that was fastest in their younger years might be the best, but that doesn't always equate, and parents don't understand that, right? As you get older, kids catch up, speed-wise, size-wise, technical ability. So I think as people get older, as kids get older, they develop different skill set, which is good. But the parents have to just be patient with that and just not, you know, just not assume that their kid's going to be the next superstar.
And trust the process.
Trust the process. Yeah, it's a marathon, as you know.
Yeah.
And, I'm stuck right in the middle of it. I went through it with my daughter. You know, it's a lot for these kids. They play, you know, my daughter comes, she goes to school during the school season. She's practicing till 5:30 at night. Then she has soccer practice at 7. And that's every day, right? And then you have games on the weekend, plus her games for her high school.
It's a lot. And I always say it's tough. You know, we talk about kind of the mental health aspect of youth sports and, you know, the pressure and the anxiety and even depression at times, because there's too much put on their shoulders with all the things you've mentioned. Is that something you're conscious of to make sure their kind of mental health is always in check?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, kids play video games now all the time, right? You know, if my son wants to escape for an hour, he plays, you know, he's studying constantly. He plays soccer constantly. If he wants to go do that, it's fine with me, you know, as long as obviously the schoolwork's getting done and your grades are up to a certain level. I'm very focused on watching their grades and seeing if they're dipped during the season or anything like that. And fortunately, I haven't had that issue, but I am very conscious of how much, you know, video games they're playing. Go outside. It's 70 degrees out. Go play. Go kick the ball around. And usually, for the most part, I don't have to push that much. They've already, it's ingrained in them. So it's I don't have to push at all, really.
And then another thing I want to talk about, it's an interesting one. And when I go back home to Ireland or visit England, people are amazed at the pay-to-play model. You know, because that doesn't exist. When I grew up, we didn't have to pay to play. Sure. Over here, you're spending a lot of money as a parent.
A lot of money.
You know, how do you feel about that? Yeah. It's just something you're a part of and you go with it?
Yeah, I mean, really, there's no other options in a way, right? I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, it is pay to play plus your tournaments, right? Plus going to Disney. Plus
travel, hotels.
Travel. Yeah, if you're going to a Memorial Day weekend tournament, it's not cheap, right? You're playing the food, you're paying for the hotel, all that good stuff. Obviously I'd like to see the system change here. But the reality is I don't think that's going to happen for a long time, unfortunately.
It's too big a country and there's not enough funding to spread around.
There's not enough funding and people get caught up in the smaller picture and people get caught up on my son's going to be the superstar here. And by the way, if you're not treating him there, I'm going to go to another club where 2 years later they're going to be looking for another club because he's not the star there and they're getting older and more competitive.
And then you're teaching them, what kind of lesson are you really teaching them if you're jumping from Jack to Jill when things don't work out? You're not teaching them how to deal with that adversity?
100%. Yeah, you have to. I mean, you have to also push them to work harder. I mean, you have to take ownership. A lot of these kids nowadays, including my kids sometimes, they don't take ownership. You know what? I'm not juggling 50 times and I'm frustrated because my coach is not teaching me how to. Well, you know what? Practice at home.
Yeah.
it's cut and dry in my eyes. Yeah. You have to put in, you know, you have to put in.
So it is a different mentality now because the world has changed and, you know, the street soccer player doesn't exist as much as we've talked about before. And maybe kids don't practice as much as they should. But I think that word ownership is a great one.
It is. I think ownership, accountability are the biggest things because, you know, I do feel like kids nowadays, they, including myself, you know, you almost spoon feed, you spoil them a little bit too much. But you have to teach them accountability and ownership.
Yeah, brilliant. Steve, it's been a great discussion. I'd love to get you back on again. I mean, you've a great story and a breath of fresh air, really, how you kind of look at bringing your kids up in terms of soccer and your expectations. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for everything.